Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I am one of your hosts, Zach.
And I am John.
And that's how you just keep rolling with it, John. Dear listener, John just tried to throw me off my game.
I did.
And he did not succeed.
Just fucking...
I'm a consummate professional, John.
Water off the back of a duck. That's what
it's,
I
it's
say.
All, yeah. Water off this duck's back. It's under the fridge now, so.
People in glass houses sink ships.
Yeah, exactly. TBD if John leaves that in, but we'll see, I guess.
Zach, we have an exciting episode today.
We do.
We are talking about minute 136 through 137 of Dune Part 2 by Denis Villeneuve.
Now, we said yesterday that we get some iconic scenes.
We do.
In this minute. And I want to be very just truthful and fair to our audience.
Okay.
That's a fair ways away from now. I know it's 60 seconds, John.
Yeah,
I told you.
We got to work our way up to it.
But I told you, Tuesday is my longest episode of notes.
Okay.
This week. Because this is the week that I nerded out, or this is the day, excuse me, that I nerded out about weather. So we're going to talk about weather.
Okay. Let's talk about the weather.
Let's talk about the weather
first
when
all,
we get there.
Yeah,
don't
I was gonna say,
rush
we,
me.
We have to get there because we left off with a superhero pose Sardaukar.
Yes.
Getting up after just getting fucking blasted by some dust and, almost certainly a massive heat wave on top of an already incredibly hot planet, on top of a already existing dust storm. We get another fucking blast of dust and almost certainly a healthy dose of radioactive fallout.
Yeah, that's never really elucidated in the shows. I mean, I think they just assume that it's not a thing anymore.
It, but like also they're shooting off atomic weapons and
maybe they've found ways around that.
That would be breaking the laws of physics.
Well, I'm not saying that I'm not saying that the bombs don't produce fallout. I'm saying like maybe their armor has become advanced to a point where it doesn't affect them.
They'd have to be wearing like the thickest lead. They would have to look like the Harkonnens from the 84 Lynch film, but also have just like lead in their armor. And I don't think that would be feasible.
I know we have talked about the textile manufacturing of the future. And hey, Dune Navigator Martin, if you're ever listening, or I know you're listening, but if you're listening to this and you want to have a fun, maybe deep dive, textiles of the future might be a good one.
Unless, not to like talk down Martin, but there could be someone that knows more about textiles.
That would be amazing. I would love to know.
If you know about textiles.
Specifically from 30,000 years in the future.
Yeah, of course. Let us know. Yeah, so we get this one Sardaukar for a few more seconds before we get a wider shot of all these Sardaukar getting up, and we see something interesting going on with the flag. So before, it was blowing one direction.
It was.
And now it's getting almost like sucked into a vacuum in the opposite direction.
It is. And we get a subtitle on the screen here.
Yeah.
That it was a little bit of an interesting one to me.
Okay.
It is Galak. Galak?
Galak? Galak?
Galak. What did we decide on a pronunciation for that? Because
I used to say Galak.
I used to say Gaelic, and that's not right.
No. Gaelic is G-A-E-L-I-C.
I know, that's what I said. It's not right.
In part one, I said Galak.
Galak. Galak. Maybe Galak is better.
Maybe.
I don't know. Whatever.
We're really good at like having pronunciations for words.
We are nothing if inconsistent. So the Sardaukar start shouting some things and we get the subtitle on the screen that has the word like shouts in Galak.
Which is very
Yeah. So this is a little bit of a retcon.
Hold on a second. Timeout.
Yeah. 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 Flag on the play. So in the core canon, I believe that the language that everyone speaks is this Galak.
Correct.
And
it's just all of us have earworms and we're getting the English translation.
Babblefish, excuse me.
Sorry. Yes. Yes. My bad.
So, I guess in
I forgot my towel.
Yes, clearly. In this interpretation of the Dune story, I guess that is just a term for the Sardaukar language.
Which is weird because David Peterson has very, like, publicly, you know, produced all of his writings and everything for the creation of the Sardaukar language, which he refers to as Sardaukar in all of his documentation that he wrote for this movie, as the guy that wrote and designed the languages for the Fremen and the Sardaukar and the Harkonnen.
Yeah.
So I'm going to refer to this as a fuck up on whoever wrote the subtitles, because we have seen this before with speaks in insert language here.
Yeah.
We've seen this fuck up a couple times, both in part one and part two.
Right. This is probably one of the largest inconsistencies, the languages that we've seen. It's just like, what are they calling them? What language gets attributed to what group, and how are they not, like, because this is supposed to be the language that everyone speaks, not just the Sardaukar language.
Correct.
Yeah. I guess, like, if we were to English, because we get English in subtitles often.
The kings.
Yeah, yes. And I guess that's just the stand-in for, like, galactic standard or basic or whatever you want to call it, depending on your franchise.
If it was D&D, it would be common or any other, like,
right.
Fucking fantasy world, that would be like common or whatever they call it.
Yeah, I think it's Star Wars is just basic. I'm pretty sure.
No, Star Wars has its own language, and I don't remember what it's called right now. Don't at me, or do. Because, like, Star Wars nerds have the whole fucking.
John, you're talking about Arabesh.
That one, yes. Thank you. With your computer in front of you to look.
Yeah, I Googled that.
Real quick. Yeah, yeah. I heard you typing on your keyboard.
But Arabesh is all the written language that we see that doesn't make any sense. But when they speak, they're speaking basic. That's the spoken language, which is equivalent to English.
Okay. They're speaking a programming language?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yep. So I guess Gaelic is Gaelic. No, fuck.
Galak?
I guess Galak is what they speak, the Sardaukar speak in Denis Villeneuve's Dune. So,
even though in part one it said in Sardaukar.
Yes.
Got it. Okay, cool.
Yep. Whew. So
that is a beef that I am much more willing to entertain than the convenience of where the explosions stop from last week.
Is okay. So by that, episode. Do you mean you're much more willing to let the language one go?
No, I'm much more willing to be like, this is a, what the fuck is this?
I'm sorry. Hang on.
Because the way that
you're going to say that a subtitle fuck up is a worse mistake than a disobeying the laws of physics.
No, I'm talking about the rocks that are like falling.
No, but it wasn't just about the rocks, John. It's never just about the rocks. It was about the whole wave.
Jesus Christ, Marie, they're minerals. I know I made that joke last week.
Yeah, that's fine, though. There's still a lot of rocks in the air.
Yeah. There's nuts in the air?
So we cut to two Sardaukar who are struggling to keep this flag up, by the way.
Yeah.
This is what you were talking about, where it shifts directions.
Mm-hmm.
which is a common trope. We've seen this in many fantasy things, just anywhere where there's a flag and you want to denote the shifting of a battle, like the tides in a battle, you'll often see a flag switch the other direction. It happens, John. Stop questioning me.
I'm not. Okay.
So we see this high up view of the, I guess, the rubble field.
Yeah, and there are some fucking huge ass boulders that are just like in the middle of this field. And I took a lot of screenshots for this week's notes because this week is a lot of like vistas and wide shots like this.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it now. There are some of these boulders that are like several people wide or tall.
Yeah.
Like this isn't just like, oh, that's a rock that's like the size of, you know, a small sedan. It's like, no, that's like a semi truck size.
Yeah, those are huge. SpongeBob would love to deliver a pizza on one of these.
The pioneers would ride these babies for miles.
So, yeah, they're massive, massive boulders. Interestingly
enough, it's a nice boulder.
It's a nice boulder. Such a boulder. That's a nice boulder. Interesting, I did not see like just bodies strewn across.
I noticed that too. Okay.
It was weird.
maybe those bodies are under all the ash and dust.
I guess. I don't know.
They're conveniently like placed under more feet of ash and dust. Okay. Yeah. I'm glad you and I both were just like, hey, wait a second.
I was like, should there be bodies around?
They're not afraid to show dead bodies in Dune. Like, where the fuck is. What's going on with this?
All this? Yeah.
Yeah.
No bodies. So those are the ones who did not crawl their way up from the 4 inches of dust.
I guess they only show dead bodies if they're just in piles being melted by like flamethrowers.
I guess so. Well, hey, at least they have standards.
Yeah. I guess. Well, no, that's not true either, because we saw like the bodies of all the people getting gunned down from the ornithopter in the first Spice Harvester attack.
Listen,
Denny, what's going on?
I will talk a little bit more about some CGI foibles later. maybe they just didn't want to do this. I don't know. Whatever. I think the easiest headcanon is that the Sardaukar who are alive have earthwormed their way to the top of the of the soil. The ones who are dead are underneath the top layer here.
Ashes to ashes, dust to dust.
I guess so. So what we see, and the reason that we're able to see the ground with such clarity here, is because all of this dust is being sucked back through the gap in the shield wall that has been created. Now,
is it time to talk about the weather?
Let's talk a little bit about the weather.
Okay, let's do that. High pressure and low pressure systems?
Well, no. I mean, that comes into play, but okay. I specifically want to talk about an unstable air mass.
I'm sure you have a lot of notes, so I'm just going to let you go.
I have a fair amount of notes.
Okay.
When you have a mass of air, it can be classified as, you know, stable or unstable, right? And it all has to do with the motion of the air. Now, yesterday when I talked about my flying, I said it was a hazy day.
Okay.
But I also said it was very smooth and very comfortable.
Sure.
Because a stable air mass, the air is not moving.
Because air is a fluid.
In this sense, sure. Yeah. When you have a stable air mass, there's not a lot of like upward or downward motion to the air. So that means all these little dust particles, dust or smoke or whatever is, you know, in the air, stay exactly where they are. And if you're flying a plane, that's real nice to fly through because it's not bouncing you up and down.
Turbulence.
That's what causes turbulence.
Yes. Oh, okay. Okay.
Now, in an unstable air mass, you're going to have a lot of upward and downward mobility of your air.
Convection?
That's an example of upward and downward motion. Okay. Yep. If you're going to have clouds form in an unstable air mass, usually they're going to be cumuliform. Clouds, which are those towering, puffy clouds, which the storm could be described as that. It is definitely towering. It's mostly dust, so I'm not going to call it, you know, water vapors, but if it had the characteristics of water, sure, then maybe it could be puffy. You're going to have good visibility. You're going to be able to see for a long time or a long way because all of the dust particles and smoke and everything are just getting sucked up into the air.
Okay.
So that's what's happening right here. So you have this massive storm that is encroaching. It is pulling all of this air up into the storm, which is feeding into everything that's happening in the storm.
Sure.
A lot of turbulence. So those ornithopters that we're going to see here probably in the next minute or two.
Spoilers.
Spoilers, I know. I'm sorry. They're getting some rough fucking air all flying through. The other two, some other characteristics of a unstable air mass is precipitation and which doesn't really apply here on Arrakis. No. And maybe one that does, but it's not quite noticeable, is a very steep lapse rate.
What is a lapse rate?
That is the rate at which air cools as it reaches altitude. So the higher up you go, the cooler the air is, but the rate at which the air cools down is called your lapse rate.
Okay.
So if you have a steeper lapse rate, which is means your air is cooling off faster, that means you're going to have precipitation at a lower point.
Got it.
So water vapor is condensing faster at a lower altitude, which means rain.
But this is Arrakis and we don't get rain.
Yes. So yeah. This also does not really apply to Arrakis.
Yeah.
God, I love the weather, man.
I can tell. How the fuck you didn't become a meteorologist sooner, I don't understand. But
it's real fun. It's real fun. So that's what we see. So as soon as I saw on screen, all this air gets sucked out, I was like, I know what's happening. There's a storm coming.
This is one of those moments that the science of the science fiction is very true.
Yeah, it is. So all this air is getting sucked up into this storm that's encroaching, and it's about to be fucking dumped back on them.
Well, it's about to be, but let's get there ahead of ourselves. Yeah, we got to get there first because we see this wind being sucked back towards the blast, and we see this open path in the mountainside, and we see it all, mm-hmm. you know, going through this open pass. And the Sardaukar spend a few seconds, you know, looking up at the giant cloud, and you know, it's retreating into the pass, and then we hear a little bit of a familiar rattle. And then
we get some clicking.
We look down at our feet and we see the familiar shimmering of the sand, mm-hmm. and it's loosening as we hear the louder knocks of Shai-Hulud approaching. Because as we said last week, the worm always comes.
And what I loved is we get the fear in the Sardaukar's eyes.
We do. And so there's like a group of Sardaukar and they're all looking up, but we're like focused in on one of these guys and we just like see him looking up. And then we cut to this giant dust cloud. Mm-hmm. And Zach, I'm so very proud and happy to say that not only do we get the emergence of Worm, we see Hole on main.
John.
Just... it is there.
We get three Hole on main.
Well, chill out.
I'm sorry.
I know you're excited.
I'm excited.
But we have Hole on main.
We have Hole on main.
We have pulsating Hole on main because we can see the teeth of Shai-Hulud kind of rattling a little bit in its mouth. And we get just the loudest as it comes out of the... cloud there.
We do. We get Anus in the sky, John. It is
Anus in the sky with diamonds?
Anus in the sky with diamonds, yeah. I was going to say it's my favorite rock band from the late 90s, Explosions in the Sky. But Anus in the sky, it's about to crash down on these Sardaukar. What a way to go.
And most of the Sardaukar turn tail and run.
They do.
Are still there like, I'm going to hold my position. And then as the worm gets closer, they're like, nope, I'm out of here.
I want to remark on a little bit of audio here for a second.
Okay.
So when we hear this burr sound that you made a second ago.
Yeah.
The subtitle says growling.
Okay.
Now, that is not a growling sound that we have heard from the worm before. Not to this, because this sounded like...
No, we have.
Have we?
Yes, we heard it as the worm was hitting the giant dune that Paul was sitting in as he was getting ready to ride the worm. We had this very similar, because we talked about how it sounded like World War II aircraft, like dive bombers.
But I thought we came to the conclusion that that was like a piece of diegetic music, not the actual worm sound.
No, it definitely sound. It was definitely like the worm that was like, like hitting the fucking.
Okay. Well, I retract my statement then, because I was like, is this a sound that we've ever heard from the worms before? Like, I didn't know they made this like freight train sound like that. Okay. Cool. You're absolutely right. Some of the starter car fucking hightail it out of there. A lot of them are just dumbstruck looking up at this thing.
I mean, if Hull presented itself like that to you, would you not be dumbstruck?
I am every time,
man. Would you not be blinded by its majesty?
Every time. And some remain swords at the ready. They're just ready to fight.
I can 1v1 this, no problem.
Now we get some of the some really cool shots of the worm riders emerging from the sandstorm.
We do, and there are, by my count, either 25 or 26. The last one was a little hard to tell if it was just like a shadow in the dust or if it was actually someone riding. But we see at least 25 riders on this worm.
Yep.
One of which is,
you know, riders on the worm.
One of which has the reins. One of which is carrying the Atreides banner that we saw last week. And all the rest of them are just fucking, they're sitting there ready to go if they need to at a moment's notice. Notably, none of them have a weirding module. None of them are yelling, "Sha!" and doing weird mouth noises. So what the fuck's up with that? Where's my weirding module, Denis?
That was a Lynch invention.
That was certainly a choice that David Lynch made with that movie. One of many choices. I know that the weirding module was a Lynch thing.
Yes. Stilgar is giving his best battle cry. I don't think we've ever seen him so happy.
No.
Well, maybe in the moments of revelation when Paul was like actually doing the thing.
This is always a different kind of happy, though. This is like a you know, kid at the candy store kind of happy, where he's God just like,
almighty.
One of the things about this in the behind the scenes, and I don't remember if it was for part one or for part two, but in the behind the scenes portions for, you know, talking about Stilgar, one of the conditions that Javier Bardem had for Denis Villeneuve was that he would do the film on the condition that he gets to ride the worm.
cool.
We are seeing Denis, you know, fulfill that obligation. And Javier Bardem's just having the time of his life here. Notably, this was also shot in Budapest on the giant worm skin that they made that's on the gimbals and everything,
sure,
too.
Sure. I wonder if the dust was practical, or at least portions of it.
It was all entirely practical, because we talked about how they like built these giant like funnel cannon systems behind or in front of these fans to just like blow dust. And they had actual tons of dust, different colors of dust too, depending on where the scene was taking place, that they were just like blasting all of these actors and actresses that were on the worm skin with, and they would go through like a ton of dust a day at least. So
that's insane.
Yeah. I think it was on the first day that they, you know, passed a ton of like an actual ton of dust being used.
So last shot of the minute is the iconic scene. I mean, these are all iconic scenes, but the last shot of this minute is the three anuses, ani? Anus was. just emerging through the dust cloud. Mm-hmm. And
And the second worm has hit the ground at this point. The third one's still looming in the
air. Yeah. And this is, I mean, notable to us, this is at least one or two of the frames that you got from the IMAX movie.
Hole emerging from mm-hmm. the dust storm was one. And then, yes, these three worms on the ground is another one of the frames.
Love it so much. What a fun minute.
Gotta love it.
We got Hole. We got Weather Talk.
We got several Shai-Hulud.
We got Scared Sardaukar.
We got several Shai-Hulud. We got Stilgar having the time of his life.
I know we don't normally do like a midweek review. But
Save it.
Okay.
We got to give the people the rating on Friday.
Okay. None of this happens in the books.
Okay. Well... Everything we would have talked about is insinuated.
I mean, they do talk about them riding the worms, and we do like he talks a little bit about like the worm coming up to the camp kind of thing, but nothing as dramatic as this.
Everything that I would have talked about, we've talked about in many weeks past. So,
okay, cool.
Yeah, go back and listen to our previous episodes.
All right. Well, how about we ride our sandworms into tomorrow's minute, and
we're not done with the worm.
We got a fair amount.
It is a worming week, if you ask me.
Well, let's get back for our Worms Day episode.
As always, you can find the Dune Minute online. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. We will be back tomorrow with more Worm and definitely more Hole on Main. We'll see you then.
See ya.